today I'm here talking with Matt Moo from Viewpoint, and Matt was actually formerly the founder, or no, sorry, not the founder, was the CEO of Cool Savings, and helped drive Cool Savings through a lot of exchanges. Matt, welcome to the call, and I'm looking forward to hearing from you.
Thank you very much.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about your history, who you are, and where you grew up, and where you came from, and all that sort of stuff before we go on what you're doing?
Sure. I guess I'll give you a little bit of personal background first, and then a little bit on the business side, and you can interrupt me at any point. I was born upstate New York, lived all over the East Coast, spent 7 years in the hills of North Carolina, went to school in, went to college in George Washington University in D.C., and after several years of working for Microsoft right out of college, moved with my fiancée at the time to Chicago, and kept working for Microsoft, and have been here for the last 14 years. After 4 years at Microsoft, I in business development roles, the last couple being working on Microsoft's both the launch of MSN and their internet platform, I left and joined a couple of extra people that I was working with as customers who had launched a company called, as you say, called Cool Savings, where I joined as the fifth employee as the VP of sales and was there ultimately for 10 years. The first five I ran sales and marketing, and just as we went public, I took over as the president and CEO and ran it as a public company for 5 years until we took Cool Savings private at the end of 2005. In the mid-2006, I had left Cool Savings after a decade there and started a new company called Viewpoint Network. We have a ratings and reviews platform, which you can see at viewpoint.com, which we're both building our own destination website, building co-brands for partners, and licensing the technology. So it's a multifaceted business model in the ratings and reviews space. And that brings us up to date.
And so here you are today. I want to ask you some questions about that finance.
Sure.
What you've done in the past. I talked with, well, first of all, I noticed in your bio that you did a presentation of Internet Explorer 3 with Bill Gates.
Yes.
How did that go? What was it like presenting with him? What's it like?
Well, I'll tell you, the history there is that very early on in my career, I mean, I was, you know, 23 or 24 at the time, I had heard rumbles that Microsoft was developing a platform to compete with AOL, and the guy that was working on it had previously been Bill Gates' technical assistant, which was a pretty plum job. His name was Russ Siegelman. And I sort of got in to see Russ and somebody who's worked with him, kind of Doris Meng, and worked my way into being a business development, one of the first business development folks for MSN. That was back in the middle of 2005. And if you remember, there was a famous memo that Bill Gates wrote after visiting Europe called the Internet Tidal Wave. Where,
2005 or 1995?
I'm sorry, 1995, yeah. And that was right around the launch of Windows 95 as well, which I think was in August of 95. And so I took a job as a business development manager for MSN, but very quickly transformed into Microsoft realizing that proprietary online platforms were not the future of online services, and that really an open standard internet was. And I started basically helping to evangelize and train the Microsoft sales force how to sell internet technologies against folks like Sun and Netscape and others that were prominent in the space. And in the process of doing that, you know, developed a comfort and an expertise in the area of sort of the burgeoning internet technology set, and as a result was called on to give a number of demonstrations to, you know, board of directors of companies that we worked with or large conferences, et cetera, and occasionally those were with either Steve Ballmer or Bill Gates. And, you know, all of my exposure to Bill Gates over the years is that he's even better than most people think he is. he has an incredible ability to absorb information both on a very, very deep technical level and a macro business level and to analyze where the whole world is going and figure it out and this kind of thing. So it was always a lot of fun to be, you know, he's a legend, obviously, to sort of be with him and be on stage with him and have him introduce me and bring, you know, do the demos and all that kind of stuff. But it was a fun part of the job.
Was he easy to work with? Was he hard to work with? Like, how actually was he?
I mean, very, you know, as you might expect, he was very intense, direct, you know, but not difficult. Like, I was never in a position where, you know, he was ripping plans apart or anything else like that. I was just making sure the presentation were going smoothly that we were getting together.
All right. And so another point you touched on, which is really interesting, is Cool Savings. And you were there. Did you take the company public?
Yeah, I was there as the I ran sales and marketing, so I was the executive vice president of sales and marketing at the exact time that we went public. And then 6 months later, I took over as the president and COO. And then 6 months after that, I took over as the CEO.
So were you there? Did it go public via an IPO or a reverse merger?
Yes, via traditional IPO.
Okay. Some companies in the internet space today are considering going public via reverse mergers, which seems like an interesting option. But then you've been in a company that was public and then had reasons to go private. Can you talk about why you did that?
Well, yeah, there were several reasons. I mean, one is that when the bubble burst at the end of 2000, Google Savings was in a very difficult position, frankly near bankruptcy and insolvency. And we brought in a strategic investor called Landmark Communications, which bought more than half the stock and then over the years continued to buy the rest of it. And eventually the point where there was such a small amount outstanding that it didn't make sense for us to be a public company. And Landmark Communications is a multi-billion dollar privately held media company. And we were a public entity sitting under the private corporation. But I'd also say that the expense and time and the distraction of being a public company is really not worth it, in my opinion. At least if you're at least a $100 million business on a very fast growth pace to be at $250 million a year. If you're anything less than that, I don't think, in my personal opinion, it's worth being public. Unless, of course, that's the only way that you can raise money. But it comes with a lot of heartache and distraction that, you're better off staying private and raising money from elsewhere.
That is really interesting. I mean, because there are quite a few people in our community who suggest that reverse mergers are a good idea and can be a way for, you know, $10 and $20 million companies to raise money and kind of move forward. And suggestion is that companies like AOL and MCI got their start through reverse mergers and were able to do acquisitions and kind of fuel themselves this way. You have an opposite viewpoint.
Yeah, I'm not an investment banker. I'm not an expert in these kind of things. I've not been in all the situations that people might be in. But for our specific situation, it didn't help us to be public. It was not... we didn't have the liquidity. We didn't get the premium pricing. The vast majority of money managers are not at all interested in companies that are that small. So you have all the regulatory issues, and sovereign doctrine compliance, and all those kind of things, disclosure issues that make it difficult to get things done. I mean, doing acquisitions or other kind of things like that are much more difficult when you're public because of the required disclosures.
The number I've heard is it looks like the CEO can take up about 30% of their time if they're a public company. And I guess what you're saying also for a small company, that's going to be a much bigger drag on the company overall.
Yeah, and you have your financial staff. I mean, you have your financial staff doing it, and you have to read through the Q's and the K's and all of those kind of things. And unless you're a large company on your way to being a billion-dollar company, you're irrelevant to the vast majority of people who have large amounts of money to deploy in a public stock market.
And so when you're talking about a $100 million company or a $250 million company, is that a company you're talking about taking public by an IPO, or would you consider the option of a reverse merger?
I frankly don't know that much about reverse mergers, so I can't comment on one versus the other.
Okay.
But if I was a $100 million company and I was growing at 30 or 40 or 50% a year and I was nicely cash flow positive and I really locked in the business model and I knew exactly how to grow and I just needed more cash and more visibility, I would consider going public. But on the other hand, private equity is also, if you really need the capital, is also a good avenue. So
for cashing out, I mean, would you consider, because IPOs are pretty hard to do now, so you're focused on cashing out and a company would be more towards an acquisition, would it?
Yeah, I'm personally not of the mindset that you should build a company with the idea that you're gonna have some major exit event and cash out. I would prefer to build a company that is very profitable and is sustainably profitable, and that in itself represents a future flow of cash for the investors, for the owners, and not think about it as we need to build it and flip it. So I'm different from a lot of entrepreneurs out there who try to figure out how to build something with the eye towards selling it within, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Viewpoints Network is not being built to flip.
You're one of those old-fashioned guys, but it sounds like the right approach to it. And maybe that means that anyway, most direct marketing type companies are built by cash flow anyway. So that's interesting thought.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, most businesses are sold, because the owner doesn't think that their future cash flows to the business are reliable or predictable or scalable enough to make it worthwhile staying in. Otherwise, can you really redeploy your cash? It's also a risk mitigation strategy as well, or timing. I mean, there's lots of different reasons. But right now, I'm very comfortable with the idea that we will continue to run and hold Viewpoints Network for a very long time.
All right. So tell us about Viewpoints. I wasn't familiar with the site, and I went and looked at it, and you've got a pretty high Alexa, 44,000. So it seems like there's a lot of activity happening on the site. Can you tell us about what it is and what it does?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you a little bit of history, too. So back in the middle of 2005, I started looking around at companies that at the time were either very new or they were growing quickly, things like MySpace and Craigslist and Flickr and et cetera. And I was just amazed. At the time, Cool Savings was over 10 million unique users, but I was amazed at how quickly these other companies were growing based on either user-generated content or social networking. And most importantly, they were doing it by not by paying for all the traffic, but by getting it organically through viral marketing or through SEO or other things. And I thought the Cool Savings ought to get into business, and started sort of thinking about ways that we would do that. And based on my knowledge of what advertisers wanted, in virtually every case that we worked with them, they were looking for in-market consumers who were actively considering making a purchase and who would have high click-through and high conversion rate and who would be end up being good, loyal customers for their businesses. And that's where we really struck on the idea of a building a ratings and review platform that would both be very organic and very viral in its nature. But, of course,
you know, is that reviews, opinion 10 years later?
I'm sorry?
Is that being opinion 10 years later?
Yeah, I think that's one way to look at it. I mean, we obviously think we're very different from opinions, and that's a lot better. But, yeah, I mean, I think for people who are aware of what opinions is and how it's grown, I mean, at one point they had 9 million uniques, and they've been declining for almost every month for the last 5 years and haven't really taken advantage of some of the more modern social networking strategies. They haven't, in my opinion, they haven't really listened to their users, their reviewers, to the extent they should, and just sort of let it atrophy. And I saw an opportunity to create a new reviews platform that was both very wide and very deep. And what I mean by that is very wide in that you can review anything, any product, service, or business that you choose to on Viewpoint. And with the and very deep is that in doing so, you develop very rich profiles of the reviewers that are the core of a social reviews platform and ultimately lead to a very viral and community-oriented experience. So it's a new, you know, it's a new approach to an old problem, but we clearly think it produces better results and it has more scale potential. And I think we've seen that. I mean, the site's only been live now for 6 months. We're already at 500,000 users and growing.
Your Alexa rank is 24,000 after 6 months.
Yeah, you know, I don't follow Alexa much. I look more at things like Quantcast and Compete and Hitwise and things like that. But yeah, we're happy with where we are in terms of traffic. We're expecting to break into the several million this year. And, you know, we won't stop until we get, you know, over the 10 million mark is really where our goal is.
So what's really interesting then is that you came from a lead generation company, and so you're knowing where the monetization point is. You came at this problem of where can you get the user when they're about to become a customer, and that's what got you to the point of a review site. It wasn't like, opinions is out there and it's dated and we're just going to knock it off. You came at it from where is the revenue and we're going to build a company around that. Is that correct?
I think that's a good way to look at it, yeah.
Interesting. Okay. What kind of method do you think to direct traffic on the site?
You know, it's if there's one thing I learned at Cool Savings, you know, we must have spent $200 million on online marketing, is that there's never a single silver bullet. You have to know how to execute across all the various disciplines. So, you know, it's everything from SEM to SEO to viral and word of mouth to affiliate marketing, CPA, CPM, CPC. You know, it's every tool in the bag that's available, basically.
Okay, so now that's pretty interesting, because I've worked with some companies, and one thing that companies really would like to be able to do is do viral marketing on a site where you can also do media buying. And that can be a very, very difficult problem to solve, because a site that you can do viral marketing for, where people want to recommend things, there often isn't enough dollars behind the business model to be able to do media, to do both viral marketing and media buying. It's either friends want to refer each other, and therefore that's the way that drives traffic, or you can go out and buy media. Yeah, it sounds like you're doing both.
Yeah, I mean, reviews are an unusual kind of viral content. And if you look at a lot of the research, they'll say that reviews are actually the most popular form of user-generated content out there. So, you know, if I talk to you about a party I went to last night or, you know, who my girlfriend did, et cetera, that's one form of viral user-generated content. But if I tell you about a great vacation I just went on and the hotel I stayed in and the restaurant I ate in, and those are all things that are actionable that you could go ahead and buy or make a reservation at, et cetera, then it becomes a different kind of environment. So we're clearly trying to organize the information on Viewpoint in a way that really helps consumers make smarter decisions, but in doing so, helps advertisers get good quality customers.
That is really interesting. Which form of driving traffic working better, the pay media or the viral media?
Viral. Yeah. Yeah, and that's intentional. I mean, we're if you do it correctly, you know, viral and SEO can be significant drivers of traffic.
So meaning you have a popular site, but so you've then also been going back. You've gone back out what a customer's worth. So, I mean, are you funded? Like, if you're able to go into media buying on that, are you able to do media buying at a positive cash flow, or is that actually you like earning some investment money?
Yeah, that's probably a private question.
Okay,
let's put it this way: it runs against my core grain to buy media at a negative margin. And it's not something that you want to do very long
to
do it at all. What's that?
So to lose the money on media, that's what you do or you don't do? I mean, don't answer
it. I don't do it. At Cool Savings, that was our business. Is we were spending, you know, $60 million a year in online marketing and getting positive arbitrages on the traffic that we were driving in. It's something that hopefully we know how to do well.
Hmm. Very cool. And so just in general on traffic forms, you're doing search engine marketing, you're doing SEO, you're doing viral. Is that, when you talk about viral, is that like invite a friend, like address book importing, that kind of stuff?
Yes.
And then,
and forward to a friend and, you know, post to Facebook and RSS feeds and all those kind of things.
I'm taking notes. And then when you're buying media, then you're going out and going to like, lead generation type company and saying, we can pay this amount for a lead that comes into our site, and you design a lead gen form, and then if they qualify, then they need your help. Is that kind of stuff?
I mean, it's not exactly that. I mean, there's all sorts of different forms of buying traffic and then watching how that traffic behaves and what value it has to you and everything else. You know, one interesting thing about Viewpoints, I think, is that every user that uses our service that writes a review makes the service itself better, which is a dynamic that we didn't have at Cool Savings, where we could have added 1 million users and the other 8 million users wouldn't have known at all that the site was any better or any worse for that. But when you have a platform like Viewpoints where they're constantly creating content that other people that then use it and consume and use and find valuable, there's a really interesting exponential network effect that goes on where every person that joins makes it more valuable for the rest. So I think
so why do users join? I mean, there are these sorts of sites out there. If I already know that I can go and search and post on Opinions, why would I go to Viewpoints?
Yeah, it's a good question, and understanding the motivations of why people contribute content online is, I think, an evolving art and really getting to know them. And I think what we've found is that there's lots of different motivations, as there are in life for a lot of things, right? So some people will do it because they feel like they've gotten something out of the site and they want to give something back. Some will do it because they like the recognition. Some will do it because they like to sort of compete and show that they can get better feedback and more visibility. Some will do it because they want to be compensated in some way. Yeah, so there's all these different segments of reviewers and things that motivate them and the reasons they do it. And there's frankly, there's successful models across the social web of examples of people doing all of the, you know, of sites focusing on just one of those models and being successful in all of them. So I don't think there's a single answer to that. The broad question of sort of what's the value proposition for the contributor, it's just figuring out in your unique categories and with your unique audience what makes them feel positive about becoming a part of the community.
So you haven't had to come up with like a totally different messaging or a different positioning statement. You just said, hey, here we are, we're a new site, and this is another great place that you can write reviews. You haven't said we're the new site that is better on reviews because of X, Y, or Z.
Well, our focus is on, one, ultimately helping people find people like them. So it's reviews from people like you is really where we consider to be our core point of difference. And we're executing a better community platform than the vast majority of review experiences. So if you look at reviews on retail websites or other standalone review sites, they kind of focus mostly on the thing being reviewed and the review itself and not on the reviewer. And I have a bias that the person who wrote the review matters a lot to me. And as much as I can know about them, it can help me put their review in context. And, of course, when you have a platform where people need to reveal a lot about themselves, it becomes a good platform also for creating social connections between people. So ideally, I want people to be able to find other people that are like them, whether it's their friends, or their family, or people they've met online, who share their personality, their profile, their passions. So if you happen to be really into surfing, I want you to be able to find other surfers and have them recommend to you what beaches to go to or what equipment to buy or what vacations to go on. And the same as if you're a owner of a golden retriever, you're going to have specific questions about that. Or if you happen to be a person who buys all the latest technology, you want to find a group of people like that. And some of those might be your friends, and you just know that they're that way. Other of them may self-identify that way and congregate online. So, and that's a hard problem to solve, in organizing people into their passions in that way and really understand what motivates people's sort of view of trust and credibility. But to me, it's a big, important problem that needs to be solved, and it's a really interesting one.
So if I'm a user on Viewpoints, how are you able to organize me into people like me? What do you know about me that makes, based on what I've done, or what do you know about me that makes me like other people?
Right, it's a great question. So at a basic level, we obviously ask you, are you male or female, and where do you live, which is some starting information. And then every time that you write a review, we ask you to describe yourself with what we call I am tags in the context of that review. And like just as an example, our most popular I am tag on the site is I am not rich. In the travel category, the most popular tag is I am a budget conscious traveler. But we also have luxury travelers, and we also have world travelers, and we also have family travelers and business travelers. So every time you write a review, we'll ask you to describe yourself in that way. And we've collected more than 500,000 tags as a result of people describing themselves in the context of a specific review. And we'll then use those tags as a way for people to find other people like them to navigate the site. So if I say I'm a food connoisseur, or I'm a fast food junkie, or I'm a speed dealer when it comes to my car, or whatever it might be, those are all ways for people to find others like them that are going to have information that way. And then that forms the basis for us to then start to understand what categories have you written reviews in, how have you described yourself in the context of those categories. And the next stage of our development is to figure out how to best now bring those people together and allow them to be more social on the site. So adding things like forums and discussion groups and things like that are directions that we're going.
This is fascinating. You've taken tags which can sometimes be a little bit of an obscure concept and people don't make it very clear. And you've made it really, really clear in the context of, well, side planning things. I've just gone into the travel section and said that I love travel, even though I travel for commercial business. I'd actually be better saying I hate travel. But anyway, so I said I love to travel and I enjoy great food. And so it's now picked out the best hotels and resorts for me, Canyon Ranch in Lenox, Massachusetts. It's a wellness spa. And I guess that's what people like me who love to travel, supposedly, and enjoy great food, that's where I like to go.
Right. And, you know, and obviously this is the kind of thing that as you have more and more reviews and more people, you get better and better results based on a broader base of coverage. So, you know, being 6 months into this, I'm proud of where we are, but I also still feel like, you know, we're at the first inning of a 9-inning game here, and we're going to really, you know, this year we're going to make some great, really great progress in continuing to differentiate so how we approach the problem of reviews versus other sites and making them more people-centric and more social in their nature.
So you're basically taking the opinion market, and I guess the opinions are stagnating a bit. You're coming in and adding in all these new sorts of things to it, driving traffic properly, and then you come in with a knowledge of lead generation, and a knowledge of acquiring traffic and then selling it in terms of lead generation. So this is, in fact, a huge lead generation site.
Yes. Yeah, like, for example, if you go into, we have a category called education, and I'm sure you and all your readers know that online education is a huge lead generation category on the web where hundreds of millions of dollars are spent. And we started ranking the best online schools and collecting hundreds of reviews from people who have actually gone there. And the better we get that, you know, we'll be able to cover all sorts of categories. So ideally, you know, we'll cover obviously auto and real estate and mortgage, financial services, online trading, all the categories where, you know, generating a lead is very, very valuable, and particularly if somebody who is in, you know, doing their due diligence and doing research to find out which one is the best.
This is an absolutely brilliant idea.
Thank you.
How long did it take you to figure this out? I mean, did you guys sit in a room somewhere and think all this through for like 2 years? Or, have you just been evolving as you started? Like,
it basically had been 3 years since we originally came up with the idea. There's a lot of difficult problems, both technical problems, marketing position problems, the whole gamut of issues that have to be overcome. I think we're doing pretty well, but I think we also have a lot left to do. It's not an easy problem to solve. It's not to have sites that you whip up and expect it to sort of, you know, take off immediately and start making tens of billions of dollars. But the important thing for us is we're building a very strong foundation, a very scalable website, and, you know, we're expecting to be able to scale into millions of users without adding a huge staff to do so. And, you know, we're very interested in partnering with companies who specialize in the various verticals. You know, so if you're a company that specializes in selling health insurance leads or online education leads, et cetera, you know, we obviously know a lot of those companies from what we did at Cool Savings, but we're interested in finding partners in all the appropriate areas.
So you're looking for lead buyers, is that what you mean?
Yeah. You know, in cases where it's appropriate, we'll work directly with the end buyer. In some cases, we'll work with the aggregators, just depending on sort of what works better.
I mean, I guess your preference is obviously to work with the end buyer.
Not always. You know, I mean, as you know, in some cases, the aggregators can pay more because they know how to use a lead to through multiple channels.
All right. Okay, so let me ask that point. So let's say I'm a housewife in Nebraska. I went on a nice vacation in Massachusetts because I love to travel and I like good food. And I fill in some stuff on Viewpoint about my holiday. And then I suddenly get 20 spam messages a day for other stuff that's similar. I mean, there's obviously the monetization effect here. How do you handle that in a way that doesn't go bad?
Well, you know, everything that I've ever done in the online marketing space has always been permission-based in a very upfront and consumer-friendly sort of way. So they have to opt in to anything that they do. So, I mean, just as a one measure, you know, we send right now 3 emails a month to our members at Cool Savings and, you know, other sort of online marketing companies. That's how many they send a day, right?
Right.
So we take a very different consumer-friendly approach to how we market to our member base, how we engage them in the community, et cetera. And then the ads on the site, you know, you're not going to be sort of automatically opted into anything. You're going to have to click on something, read what it's all about, and respond to it. If you fill out a form that is, you know, very clear on what they're asking for and they collect information from you, you know, that's part of just being a smart online user and knowing when to give your information to a third party and when not to.
So in the case of looking at the reviews of AIU, I can find a review helpful. How do I submit a lead? How do I kind of lead for AIU?
Well, there should, I'm not looking at it right now, but there should be some cost per click ads to the side of that. You know, we haven't really gotten around to striking these individual lead gen relationships with the various companies yet. We're waiting to build a bit more traffic and scale.
Okay, so your focus is just around getting traffic, getting the site up and running. You're doing a little bit of monetization with AdWords, AdSense, and that's it.
Yes, that's right.
right. And so then later on, I guess there'll be a big green button or something that says, sign up for AIU now. Is that a sort of thing? And then I can
exactly, yes. Yeah, or request information, you know, those kind of things.
Requesting. Yeah, right. And I guess then you, I mean, as far as Lydia goes, I don't know how far you can go with this, but you can even, you can do a hot call right there, so you can have a hot transfer right off the site.
Yes.
Hmm. That would be pretty valuable.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the idea, is that, you know, these are consumers who are actively engaged. They're in-market consumers. They're actively engaged in making a purchase decision, which makes them very different from somebody who just happens to respond to a banner or an email.
Yeah, right. I want to ask you some questions about a somewhat related site. Maybe you can tell me how related it is. A site named Judy Book?
Yes.
I've been reading the blog of the CEO, a guy named Andy Sack, I guess is his name, and watching as they've evolved from various different things, and then they end up going toward being, I guess, a shopping site, something like this one, and have now kind of gone downhill. What are your thoughts on what they've done, and how does it compare to what you're doing? How are you going to avoid having what happened to them happen to you?
Well, you know, when they started out, and I think they started out in late 2005, early 2006, they were competing against Yelp and Insider Pages and focused on a local market. I read Andy's blog as well, and I've followed them and got to know them a little bit. I can't really speak to exactly what per se they did wrong or they did right. I mean, I think what we've done differently from them is we obviously cover many more categories than they do. We're not just local; that's just one of our 20 different categories. We focus pretty heavily on the social aspect of review writing and building a community. And I think that's something that is important. And if you want to be viral and grow that way, you have to do that. But the combination of having very rich profiles of reviewers, creating a very social platform, and then allowing them to rate and review a very wide range of products and services and businesses is really sort of the secret sauce in the whole recipe.
And you got the business started through, I guess, some kind of an investment, or have you been self-funding?
I raised $5 million in a Series A to start the business.
Right. Why have the Google Ads then? Do they provide a lot of revenue?
What's that?
How come you have the Google Ads? Why don't you pull those since you funded?
Our partnership with Google is an important part of our strategy. And, you know, I like relevant ads, particularly, you know, when it can be all done automatically the way Google does it. So I don't have any reason to switch.
So you're going to, let's say you've got in a direct partnership with AIU and you're doing hot transfer leads to them. You'll still keep the Google pay-per-click ads once you got that going?
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see where on the page and how on the page you might put it, and if our, you know, exactly how that works. But it's certainly not assumed that they would go away.
Hmm. How then? How would you compare what you're doing here to Mahalo?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Mahalo is really broad based. So where we focus on reviews, they tend to focus on any kind of content in any category, you know, at all. And they have a majority of their writers are paid writers. But I do think there are some similarities. I mean, we see the world, you know, similarly in some instances.
But they're not doing reviews, are they? They have like one category owner for each category, whereas yours is user contributed content.
Right.
Hmm. What about integration with social networking sites? I mean, is there a way for me to put my viewpoint stuff on Facebook?
Yes. Yeah. You can easily take your own feed and drop it straight into Facebook, and I do this, and all of the reviews that you write on Viewpoints will show up in your Facebook feed.
And so that means basically any time I write something in the Viewpoint, that will then show up on my Facebook, like to all the people who are monitoring me, that will show up to all of them so that they can see that I've written a review on this particular place in Massachusetts.
Right.
Hmm. And so that for you is yet another form of driving traffic?
Yes.
And is that a Facebook application that you've done, that they've been included in Facebook, or is that an RSS feed or something else?
It's just an RSS feed that Facebook can accommodate.
Very interesting. So the kind of people you're looking for right now, you want lead buyers, either direct or aggregated. Are you looking for, you want people that can help you drive traffic? I mean, what are the other areas of where you're looking to partner with people?
Yeah, you know, one of our big points of emphasis is we want to attract more people to write reviews on Viewpoints. So finding sources of people who really, you know, enjoy writing reviews, and even better if they're in specific categories. So electronics or travel or, you know, other categories like that. We tend to be attracting pretty diverse audience, with a concentration in a female audience, married, present to children in the home. You know, so what you're talking about.
I think they run half the internet, maybe even more.
Yeah.
I don't think they have an internet. They wasn't the soccer moms. I mean, it seems like they do everything. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just some of the stuff that I'm around, but they're everywhere. So yeah, I mean, so you want more soccer moms, you want that kind of drive. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we are not explicitly targeting sort of the younger, you know, Gen Y, you know, hipster urban dweller. We're definitely going after people who are homeowners and who have kids and have some very practical needs. So I'll be, you know, very happy if we end up doing well in vacuum cleaners and humidifiers and strollers and car seats, as opposed to, you know, big screen TVs and digital cameras and things.
Does this mean then, do you also see this as becoming a big revenue generator from affiliate commissions as well, or is it mainly lead generation?
No, I think we'll do both. I think the affiliates that have, you know, obviously you have to negotiate the right revenue share to the affiliate programs, but I think there's some potential there.
So how does that then work? Let's say I'm browsing the reviews on Viewpoint, so I'm shopping for a humidifier, and I read some great reviews, and then I go to the link to click on it. Does that then mean that I buy from the link that you guys have provided, but that ends up costing me like you know, 10% more because you got the highest payout for you, but that wasn't necessarily the best payout for me as a customer?
No, retailers don't change their prices like that. It's the same for everybody. I see what you're saying. Do we show the merchants based on their yield?
Well, are you going to show multiple merchants, or would you just show the one merchant that's your featured merchant, or how does that work?
No, we show multiple, yeah. But you pull up any product in our database, and you'll see that there's usually 5 or 6 different merchants. In some cases, there's 15.
Right, and so you'll have an affiliate relationship with all of those. I guess you would then rank them by yield, but then that's up to the consumer to then select which one they want to buy from.
Yeah, and what we've really done here is we partnered with Shopping.com, and so we have access to all of their merchants, and we tap into their API.
So is that something you'll do long term, or is that just for now?
No, I think we'll do that long term. And maybe not with Shopping.com long term, but we will work with our shopping comparison engine who already has that business optimized.
Oh, is that so much working on Google as it's easy to work with someone rather than do it yourself?
Yeah.
All right. What about, do you end up with fake reviews or untrustworthy stuff? I mean, have you seen any issues in it so far?
Yeah, I think that's a common concern, a common question. We have a number of ways to try to address people's concern in that area. So, you know, one is at the bottom of every, and I think we're one of the only ones that ever does this, but at the bottom of every review, we specifically, in a separate question, ask people to disclose their affiliation with the thing that's being reviewed. And if they are related, are they the owner? Are they an employee? Are they an agent of, et cetera? So we're there relying on the goodwill of people to tell the truth. But then we also have a second mechanism where every time a review is read, a reviewer can rate it as either helpful, yes or no, or they can report it as inappropriate and report fraud where they believe that it exists. And then we rank our reviews and display them based on their helpful ratings. So, you know, in time, reviews that are clearly not accurate, not helpful, et cetera, really won't get any visibility in the system. But at the end of the day, you know, we are allowing anybody to write reviews, so it is possible that somebody will commit fraud and violate our terms of use and not answer the questions accurately. But we have not seen it to be an issue, a significant issue to date.
And I guess if guys are coming in and asking for something like that, then the tone will be somewhat picked up in the review, and then it'll be voted down.
Yeah, well, and you know, obviously, we need to get better also, and we are focused on it, on building a good reputation system for our reviewers. So if you come in and you want to write one review that's an absolute buff piece of your hotel, you're not going to get the same kind of, you know, credibility scores associated with your review as if you had written several reviews in lots of categories and gotten already lots of good feedback. So in that respect, it's similar to the problem that eBay or Craigslist or anybody else grapples with when it comes to, you know, sort of fraudulent usage of their own services. And it will have the equivalent of an eBay power seller type of rating in our system.
Will there be any comment on the system at all, or is the revenue just focused around lead gen, pay-per-click type ads, and affiliate commission?
Yeah, we're not planning to be a merchant.
Cool. Is there anything that we should talk about which we haven't covered?
No, I think you've done a pretty good job covering what we're all about and who we are and what our plans are, et cetera.
Cool. Well, Matt, thanks very much for your time.
Okay, thank you, and look forward to seeing the interview.